This is Active Lehigh Valley on 88.1 WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio.
Welcome to Active Lehigh Valley. The program is generously supported by St. Luke's University Health Network, and its aim is to encourage listeners to stay happy, healthy, and active. I'm John Dodds, and today I'm speaking with Louise Schaefer, co-owner of Edge of the Woods Nursery, with Sue Tansis. Based in Orfield, the nursery specializes in plants native to the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast ecosystems. A warm welcome, Louise.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, we're very happy to have you here. Now, I have so many questions I want to ask you, but let's get to the big question, get it out of the way. What is native planting and why is it so important?
Native plants are plants that evolved here in this climate and geologic area. And not only did they evolve here, they evolved along with all the other elements of the ecosystem at the same time, along with insects, wildlife, birds, other plants, and eventually humans. And as they evolved, they became interconnected.
So that's really what an ecosystem is.
Yep. It's all the parts working together to create a balanced, thriving habitat and sustenance for all the creatures that live there.
So when we have native planting and we have an ecosystem and we bring other things in, that starts to create an imbalance.
It does, yes. It can. Some things may come in that don't make a huge difference, but an example of something that has made a huge difference is, for example, the American chestnut. When some oriental and non-native chestnuts were brought over, they brought with them a fungus that was never part of our ecosystem before, and it actually destroyed most of our American chestnuts. Not every non-native element is that destructive, but many of them have impacts, and some can be very destructive.
And so it's important not just to have an ecosystem, but for us, even within our gardens, to have a balanced ecosystem.
Exactly, yes. Everyone's individual gardens, yours, mine's, your neighbor's, play a role in the ecosystem. And creating a balance within your little part can help the larger Lehigh Valley ecosystem remain balanced.
Right. So what differences will we notice if we follow a balanced ecosystem and have native planting in our gardens? What will we notice and what will the world and our garden notice?
Okay, I'll start with what you'll notice in your garden with a balanced ecosystem is you will see insects. You will see some damage to some of your leaves. That means your garden's doing its job. It's supporting insects that require the nutrients provided by those leaves. You'll also see probably more birds, butterflies, pollinators than you would otherwise. A balanced ecosystem within your garden is going to have more than one species of plant. It's not going to be one whole huge row of the same identical plant. You'll have things blooming at different times. You'll have some evergreen, some deciduous. You'll have different layers. You'll have the top canopy, the middle layer, and you'll have lower ground cover layer, and they all interact with each other.
Well, that's an important point, because when I was thinking about how you go through a typical season in native planting, talk us through a season when we start in January, February, and and how that happens throughout the year in native planting.
Yeah, actually, a lot of people think of the winter as an off-season for gardens, but they can actually be quite dynamic. So if you start in January, you have a lot of dormant plants showing. And we encourage people not to cut back everything to the ground. Let the perennials set seed. You'll see finches coming to eat the seeds off of your dormant coneflowers. You'll see some static things. In addition to seeing birds coming and eating berries and that kind of thing, there's just some static things that you may notice. They're not moving, but a lot of overwintering insect life can look like a withered up leaf. You'll see that and you'll see the potential, and you'll be excited that you see that dormant potential. So in the winter there's a lot to notice and there's still some things to see. And then as spring comes, everybody knows the earth is bursting with activity. You'll see that. You'll gradually see things green up. Some things green up slower than others. So we encourage people not to rush the, quote, garden cleanup. A lot of our overwintering pollinators stay in those tan, dormant stems. And if you remove them from your garden prematurely, you're removing them from your garden ecosystem. Then spring, there's a lot of subtle blooms, but they're important for some of our early pollinators. And there are many native plants that will support early pollinators. Sometimes we're hearing a lot about how we need to leave the dandelions for the early pollinators. Well, I'm here to say that the native plants are here before the dandelions, and the early pollinators were just fine. But we need to have those plants for the spring, early spring bloomers. And they're not maybe quite as showy as zinnias and pansies and all that, but they are critical. And then as the summer comes, native plants really shine in the summer. Many of them are blooming, bursting with color. And the heat of the summer, they just go on and on. Then fall, we all know fall, things start to slow down. You may see monarch forming chrysalis in some of your plants. Milkweed is the one. Things slow down. You'll see berries start to form and ripen. You'll see some seed heads dry up, and you'll know that soon the birds will come for them. And as the leaves drop, then you'll begin to see things getting ready for winter, and it all starts again. And the other exciting thing about the seasons with native plants is the next year, it might be a little different because these plants respond to niches within your garden, and they might move over a little bit, or they might, one year they might be taller or brighter. So every year is just a little bit different, and that adds to the excitement.
And I think you mentioned some very interesting points about the fact, don't cut everything back or don't make it look too pretty, because to have a live garden, you need to have things that feed off each other. Like, we don't like insects sometimes. Ooh. But actually, insects are really an important part of that organic growth of that garden and indeed the ecosystem.
Absolutely. If we go back to our middle school biology and the food chain, and, you know, it all starts with the little tiny organisms, and those insects, we may not think they're too helpful to us personally immediately, but something eats them and something bigger eats that, and on and on and on, and they all play an important role. And the other thing to remember is any kind of, quote, cleanup we do is purely for our aesthetic, and that, not to say that you shouldn't clean up, but remember, these plants were here before they invented pruning shears. They were here before right. They invented hoses. And the plants themselves were just fine. And the ecosystem was fine. And all the creatures and insects that use them can cope with it. They know how to deal with it. In fact, they thrive with it. But it's a balance, because we know that, you know, sometimes people like things a little neater than others. But there's ways to do it judiciously so that everybody wins.
Right. I mean, the essence of native planting is that nature is allowed to thrive. Mary Ellen explained when I took your excellent tour, but it's not really a cookie cutter kind of gardening, is it? It's very much letting nature take its course. And how does that fit in with the fact that some of your neighbors might like a manicured lawn and manicured plant beds?
Well, I'd like to dispel the concept that it's always messy. It's not. It's selecting the right plants for the right place. If you have a small area, don't select a big plant that's going to overwhelm your space. Selecting the right plant for the right place means picking a plant that will thrive in with that soil, with that moisture, with that sunlight. It also means taking into account the space that you have for it to thrive. And some of it is maybe adjusting our aesthetic, but there are many, many native gardens throughout the Lehigh Valley that are beautiful and lovely in residential neighborhoods, and no one's complaining about them.
Right. I mean, an English country garden is
very similar.
Yeah.
The main difference with native planting is we like the plants to fill the bed, as opposed to having polka dots of plants in the bed surrounded by mulch. And if we can expand our view past the polka dots surrounded by mulch, that's really the only aesthetic difference. You know, you just allow the bed to be full and complete.
Plentiful.
Edge it, trim around it as much as you desire. But the insects and the birds are going to love that lushness.
Right. So for those of our listeners that are saying, oh, this is kind of interesting, I'd far like to fill my garden rather than to just have bits that the deer can eat. How do you plan for your ideal native garden? Is it about asking yourself whether you want color or bees or seasonal color or smell or impact on the environment? How do you balance all of that?
Yeah. You ask yourself all those questions and then you say, what kind of soil do I have? Is there sun? Is there shade? Is there drainage? Does the water lay there after a rainstorm? And that's really the key when we say right plant, right place. You match the plant to the site instead of saying, well, I want to plant this, but it needs X, Y, and Z, and I don't have them, so I'm going to bring them in. I'm going to make the soil more acidic. I'm going to water every other day. I'm going to know. For any naturally occurring condition, there are native plants that evolve to thrive in it. So we don't need to fight our sites. When people come in and say, I have terrible soil. Oh, well, no, you don't. We just need to understand your soil and pick a plant that will love it. So you understand your site, and then you see which plants will work in that site and go from there. And you can still have your choice of colors and smells and pollinators and with whatever site conditions you may have. But that's the first step.
Right. And when you start with native plants, is it about the soil first or is it about the location? What is the driving force behind all of this?
The soil. Mm-hmm. The soil, meaning fertility, drainage, clay versus shale versus rich humus that you might find in a woodland. And they're quite different. And so you select a plant that will work in it. Now, some of the plants will grow in any site, but there's others. And we do have detailed signage at the nursery to help people with this and also staff that can help. Some plants will grow in any site. Others, you've got to have this exact soil or you're just going to be disappointed. So the soil is the first thing. And we joke whenever there's a plant not doing well, and we say, well, what do you think is wrong with it? Well, it's the soil.
Right.
That's the answer. It's the soil. What do you need to do with the soil so that plant gets what it needs to thrive?
And how do you know what type of soil you have? It sounds a crazy question. But once you get into understanding exactly which plant fits which soil, you need to know what the soil is.
You put a shovel in and you dig it up. And most people can understand, okay, if you can't even get the shovel in because it's so rocky, you've got rocky soil or shale. If you have shale soil, there's a lot of people in the valley that live in a shaley area. You put that shovel in, lots and lots of little rocks coming up. It's very annoying to plant in shale, but that's shale provides lots of mineral nutrients. Clay, put the shovel in, you get one big mucky piece up and out. That's clay. So most people can understand that. So there's just a few basic types. Now, beyond that, you can get a lot more detailed in terms of pH and nutrient level. You don't need to be a soil scientist.
Right.
You just need to know, is it clay? Is it shale? Is it humusy?
So get dirty.
Put the shovel in.
Put your hand in and feel it. Great.
Exactly.
This is John Dodds with Louise Schaefer, and she is the co-owner of Edge of the Woods Nursery on Active Lehigh Valley. After the break, we'll discuss who are the bad guys in your garden and what you can do about them.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Did you know that your phone is a radio? You can tune in to WDIY anywhere on the go with WDIY's phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store, and your phone will become your trusted radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone live and access your favorite music shows on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to Many Choices, Real Voices.
Welcome back to Active Lehigh Valley with Louise Schaefer, co-owner of Edge of the Woods Nursery. We talked about the different type of soil, but as you know from your own customers, gardening can involve the smallest of plots or even pots in the larger gardens. If I'm living in a city and have a small area, how should I start with the adoption of native planting? Some insider tips.
With a very small plot, you can definitely use containers. Any plant can thrive in a container as long as it's big enough for the plant and you keep it watered, adjusting for the weather it's exposed to. Sun or shade? Is your balcony in the sun or is it in the shade or half and half? And pick some plants appropriate for that spot. If you have a small plot, you're not restricted to a balcony, same considerations would apply. Check your soil, check your sunlight, and then I have this much space. So then you select plants that would fit that space. There's small plants, there's big plants.
And you're still making a difference whether it's a small plot or a large plot.
Absolutely, especially if you're supporting pollinators. Every native plant added to our neighborhoods helps because it's the cumulative effect of all the native plants within the area that the birds, the wildlife, the pollinators can go from place to place. They don't see your boundary lines. They don't know your survey lines, but they know, oh, there's a little one I can use. And then maybe down there, there's a little one I can use.
It's a beautiful thing when it all starts to fill in and start to develop its own personality.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Louise, we talk about native planting, but many of us have acquired or unwittingly developed gardens or spaces in our home that are not friendly to the ecosystem. What should we really do about that?
Well, there's a few plants that we would be very excited to see anyone remove from their landscape that actually actively harm the ecosystem by spreading uncontrollably and pushing out the native species and at the same time not providing any benefit to our ecosystem. There's some that actually, the berries may be toxic to songbirds, and we're not aware of it. Heavenly bamboo is one that has these beautiful red berries, but they're toxic to the songbirds. So the first thing would be to look at what you've got and, okay, if I can make one change, what change is going to have the most impact? And that would be removing the one species of plant you may have that is very detrimental. And the Native Plant Society puts out what they call the Dirty Dozen list every year. So you could just Google plant Dirty Dozen and say, okay, well, maybe this year I might take that out of my landscape.
Yes, we'll say plant Dirty Dozen, otherwise you might get a movie out there, yeah.
Right, because I Googled it last night and I had to add the word plants. So, there's lots of Dirty Dozens, you're right, yes.
So plant Dirty Dozen, and that's important because actually some of our favorites are interlopers can affect the insects that we love. I mean, I was shocked to know that a good example is the butterfly bush. I mean, I've got two beautiful butterfly bushes in the garden and the butterflies flock to it at this time of year. And you told me and Mary Ellen told me that that's actually a no-no.
Yes, actually the butterfly bush doesn't support the larval form of a single North American butterfly species. And butterflies, we love the butterfly, but we have to remember a good part of its life cycle, that butterfly is a caterpillar. And that caterpillar needs to eat something. And each butterfly species has its own plant that it needs to eat. One butterfly we're all becoming more familiar with is the monarch. It needs to eat milkweed. So the butterfly bush is very, very attractive with its nectar. And it does feed the adult butterflies. They must have somewhere nearby to lay their eggs. And the eggs must be laid on the larval host plant. So it's got to be nearby. So what we suggest is, well, we would love it if you would just remove your butterfly bush. But the next best thing is to make sure you deadhead those plants, because those seeds go throughout the greater Lehigh Valley. Even if you don't see it spreading in your garden, they will spread far and wide through the movement of birds. Deadhead those flower heads before they set seed, and plant some larval host plants nearby so that all those butterflies you're attracting do have somewhere to lay their eggs, so the caterpillars have food to eat to make the next generation of butterfly.
That's really important, because I noticed that a butterfly bush just suddenly appeared in the garden and now it's huge. And
yes,
to your point. Now, are you saying that we should literally get rid of the butterfly bush? I mean, I'm happy to do it if it helps the butterflies.
That would be our advice.
All right. Okay. Well, I know where to go to help with that one. And what actual plants should I replace that with? And would they look as nice?
Well, that's an excellent question. And so we can suggest an assortment of plants that will bloom throughout the season. The butterfly bush is an invasive species. One of the ways it's invasive, its strategy is producing seed constantly. To produce seed, they have a flower. So it's blooming constantly, setting seed all season long. So is there a native plant that's going to bloom constantly all season long? Not too many, but we can plant an assortment of plants that will come into bloom and out of bloom, and those seeds will provide nutrients for birds. In the same time, when the flowers are blooming, they'll provide nectar for pollinators. So if you're looking for something that would be similar in habit to the butterfly bush, one thing we sometimes suggest is a plant called clethra or summer sweet, which has a similar shaped flower, and it does attract a lot of butterflies. It doesn't bloom all season long, though. So then you'll plant some other things along with it to give you that all-season bloom. So one of the trade-offs with planting native is appreciating the role these plants are playing and understanding that the gardens aren't just for our aesthetic beauty. They do that, but they have another important job to play. And it's appreciating the importance of that job and balancing it with, do I need to see something blooming right there in that same spot all season long?
And also it's about your own personal commitment to the garden, because if you choose a range of plants, you will see different plants throughout the season and be doing good at the same time.
Exactly.
But it does require you to water them. It does require you to cut them. And so I think it depends on your time as well, because I know myself, I struggle with the time to give to the garden, and it notices. But I think a natural garden is actually a little bit more forgiving, is it not?
Absolutely. And even though every plant, once until it's established, will need some watering and some maintenance, if you've sited your plant properly, you will not need to water it once it's established, unless we have like an unusual hot, dry spell. You may need to go out and give it some supplemental water. But once your garden's established, it is self-sustaining. And if we've helped you correctly select the plants for your site, you should not need to be watering. And the trimming is only to your desired level of aesthetic.
Oh, that's very interesting. So it is sustaining, and it can actually help you in terms of your own time as well. It gives you the beauty, gives you a bit more time. Interesting.
It can, yes.
Now, are there any other bad boys in the garden that we should be focused on?
There are. We don't like to be too negative in the way we approach things, but there are some plants that everybody's familiar with, and some of them are very common that we try to help people understand why it's important to remove them. Norway maple is one. Calorie pear, those are the flowering pears. The sale of them has now been banned or reduced. It's a phased-in thing. The privet that people use for hedges, that's invasive. Burning bush. People love burning bush because fall color.
Oh, I love burning bush.
Yes, that is an invasive. You see that coming up in the woods, and it doesn't support many native species. It also supports a lot of ticks, they're finding out.
Oh, my gosh.
We can recommend things with equally vibrant fall color, so that if you take your burning bush out, you won't lose that fall color.
Oh, that's useful to know. There's always good substitutes. Well, that's yeah. fascinating. Well, visiting Angie the Woods is very different to a regular nursery. It's like stepping into someone's garden with different plants growing at different times of the year and flower beds dotted all around the nursery. If someone visited you with the best intentions, what advice would you give them not to spook them out? But it's overwhelming. I mean, it's beautiful, but it's quite different. It's like a magical garden.
Yes, which is why we do offer tours every Tuesday as an introduction to people every Tuesday at 10, most Tuesdays at 10, just to show people around. And we know it's overwhelming because there's a lot to the whole plant native effort. So we have created a small area as you enter with just some of the plants that are really looking good at the moment. And you could just stay there. You don't need to wander around and get overwhelmed. And we do have staff there to help.
Very helpful staff.
Yeah. Signage. The main thing is don't come if you're in a hurry, right?
That's true.
Yeah. Signage, we encourage some people to go ahead and take photos of the signs and go home and think. The signs are all posted on our website as well.
They're very, very user-friendly, very simple, and help you make decisions.
Thank you. A lot of nurseries just purchase their signs pre-made. We make our own signage, and we've been tweaking them for 20 years now. And every year we have a new way to improve the signage. And start small. The main thing is don't get stressed out. Plants should help you relax. Walk around, see what appeals to you, or maybe take home one plant, or maybe just take home one idea. You don't have to transform your garden overnight, just a little at a time. And it's actually better that way to do your garden a little at a time because you can let the plants tell you what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. You put in a few. Did I pick the right ones? Are they happy? I'll get more of them. Oh, well, that one didn't. Maybe that was a bit of a wrong choice. Let me try something else and do it a little at a time.
It's a wonderful way of getting to know a natural approach to your garden and very, very welcoming as well. Finally, Louise, where can listeners find you physically and digitally?
We are on Route 100 north of Tillman Street, 2415 Route 100, Orfield. Although most people feel it's Fogelsville. It's one of those weird post office things. And on the web, we're at www.edgeofthewoodsnursery.com. And we're also on Facebook.
Oh, excellent.
And
excellent.
Instagram.
Wonderful. Well, Louise Schaefer, co-owner of Edge of the Woods Nursery, thank you so much for joining me. This is John Dodds. Thank you for joining us on Active Lehigh Valley from WDIY 88.1.
If you enjoyed this program, please go to wdiy.org or the WDIY app to share or become a WDIY member.